craft, killing all three men inside. The engineers redesigned the spacecraft, carefully discovering, then fixing the flaws that had caused the fire. They honored the dead by learning from the mistakes of the past and carrying on with future missions. Each experience offered important information that could be applied to future flights. In the 1960s, the Apollo program built on its successes, steadily aiming toward a landmark achievement of the space program, a manned mission to the moon. Mission to the Moon. The 238,900-mile mission to the moon would take 6 days, 3 days to get there, and 3 days to come back. The ambitious plan included 21 hours exploring the surface of the moon for two astronauts in the lunar lander, a separate vehicle that would drive across the moon while the service module circled above. The plan sounded simple, but Katherine Johnson knew better than anyone that if any aspect of the Apollo 11 mission to the moon went wrong, the astronauts could be stranded in space, never again to see their earthly home. Years later, Katherine would say that working on the math that coordinated the orbiting Apollo Command and Service Module, CSM, one part of the spaceship that would remain parked in orbit around the moon, with the ship's lunar lander, the rowboat of a module that would take the astronauts from the CSM down to the moon's surface, was the highlight of her career at NASA. The leadership of the Space Task Group set a risk standard of 3 nines for the space missions. In other words, it required that every aspect of the program, every part, every plan, every person, succeeded 999 times out of 1,000. The astronauts were prepared to give their lives to the mission, but they didn't want to die because of a math error. Katherine Johnson worked long hours to make sure the astronauts stayed safe. She arrived at the office early, went home in the late afternoon to check on her girls, and sometimes came back to work in the evening, maintaining a schedule of 14 or 16-hour days. She and the engineers she worked with asked each other what-if questions. What if the computers went out? What if there was an electrical failure on board the spacecraft? What if something went wrong? They had to think ahead, anticipating and solving every problem they could think of before it happened. Chapter 23. One Small Step. A human being on the moon. It was hard for most people to believe that something that humankind had dreamed of for thousands of years was finally coming true. It also amazed many Americans to learn what an expensive trip it was. Together, the Apollo missions cost a mind-boggling $24 billion, or about $156 billion in today's dollars. Not everyone believed that the exploration of space was worth the astronomical price tag. A few days before the Apollo 11 launch, 200 protesters marched outside Cape Canaveral as part of the Poor People's Campaign, a movement designed to bring attention to the problems facing poor people of all colors. At the beginning of the 1960s, the space program and the civil rights movement shared a sense of optimism. Scientific idealists believed that technical know-how would make the future better, and civil rights advocates fought hard to ensure that everyone, regardless of race or color or background, would receive the blessings of democracy that the United States Constitution promised all of the country's citizens. By the end of the decade, some of those civil rights leaders argued that the billions of dollars spent to send a handful of people to the moon could help many millions of poor people right here on Earth. Activists challenged NASA to consider the worthiness of the space program when disadvantaged people on Earth could barely put food on the table. Many people also asked why there weren't any black astronauts and why there were only a few black engineers or scientists working for NASA. African Americans believed that outer space belonged to people of every race, and the space program should too. Not many of them knew that in Hampton, Virginia, black women like Catherine and Dorothy and Mary and Christine were working hard, using their mathematical talents to help the United States. Landing. On July 20, 1969, more than 600 million people around the world sat in front of their TVs, eager for their first close-up look at the heavenly body that they had only ever seen in the sky from their earthly home. While the astronauts continued their 238,900-mile journey to the moon, Katherine Johnson had just finished a much shorter trip. She and about 100 of her sorority sisters had come to a quiet hotel in the Pennsylvania mountains for a weekend retreat. Even there, however, everyone was eager for news of the historic voyage. The other women crowded around the hotel's small black-and-white television, listening to the news anchors and watching the screen as the astronauts glided closer and closer to their destination. The moon mission was so complex that it had taken more than 400,000 people working as a team to send the spacecraft safely on its way. Since the early 1960s, when President Kennedy announced that he wanted America to land a person on the moon, Katherine Johnson had worked hard on the analysis that had eventually made this day possible. She had given years of hard work to NASA and its mission, but the hardest part might have been to sit watching the astronauts moving away from Earth through the cold vacuum of space, bound for the moon. She knew there was no way she would be able to relax until the astronauts had landed on the moon and returned safely back to Earth. Even with 26 manned flights under NASA's belt, this was different, and everyone knew it. Katherine Johnson watched the television. The Eagle, the lunar lander, a crab-like mechanical contraption carrying astronauts Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, emerged from the Apollo command module and descended to the surface of the moon. At 10:38 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on July 20, 1969, humankind set foot for the first time in history on a heavenly body other than Earth. Astronaut Neil Armstrong climbed down a ladder and stepped onto the moon.
"That's one small step for man," he said. "One giant leap for mankind."
The actual landing had been one part of the mission that had been impossible to rehearse, and the most dangerous. The Apollo 11 astronauts had given the mission only a so-so chance of success. Neil Armstrong thought they had a 50-50 chance of landing on the moon on the first try. Katherine Johnson had confidence. She knew her numbers were right. She always expected the best. "You have to expect progress to be made," she said. Timing was everything. After the moonwalk, Katherine knew the astronauts had a brief window to get back into the lunar lander and reconnect with the mothership above. Then they had 3 long days on the highway back to Earth, followed by a journey through the fire of the atmosphere and down to the ocean below. She knew she would hold her breath until the space pioneers had been lifted from the ocean by the waiting Navy ships. But the mission was a success, from beginning to end, takeoff to splashdown. The astronauts had returned to their home on Earth safely. Katherine enjoyed a bit of ease, but only for a moment. NASA still had 6 more Apollo missions planned, and there was always the thrill of the next discovery. Now that NASA had successfully landed astronauts on the moon, Katherine and some of her co-workers had talked about a mission to Mars. Others dreamed about going even farther away from Earth, embarking on a grand tour that would send a spacecraft hopping from Mars to Jupiter to Saturn, like a stone skipped across a glassy lake. It wouldn't be easy, but the nimble minds at Langley could make it a reality, Katherine thought. Why should flying a person to Mars be any less achievable than sending a man into orbit around Earth or landing a man on the moon? One thing built on the next, Katherine Johnson knew. Once you took the first step, anything was possible. This is Bonnie Turpin. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Hidden Figures Young Readers Edition by Margot Lee Shetterly. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services. The director was Kyle Verville. Executive producer, Caitlin Gehring. Text copyright 2016 by Margot Lee Shetterly. Production copyright 2016 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.